Recorded Books presents A Place Beyond Courage by Elizabeth Chadwick, narrated by Rosalind Landor. Les pros et les vassals, souvent entre pieds de cheval, car jalicoar ni chaseron. The brave and the valiant are to be sought often between the hooves of horses, for never will cowards fall down there. L'histoire de Guillaume le Marécal. Chapter 1. Vernon-sur-Seine, Normandy, autumn 1130. "Why," John Fitzgilbert asked with icy displeasure, "does the list say palfreys, when the beasts I've just seen in the stables are common nags?" He cast his deputy a penetrating look from eyes the hue of shadowed water. "My lord?" A muscle ticked in the fleshy pouch beneath the man's left eye. Tresses of autumn sunlight swept across the rushes, carpeting the great hall of King Henry's hunting lodge, and trailed the edge of a trestle table, illuminating the lower third of a parchment covered in a scribe's swift scrawl. A strand of gold touched the back of John's hand and twinkled on the braid cuffing his tunic. "One's spavined, another's got mange, and the chestnut's old enough to have carried Moses out of Egypt." He stabbed a forefinger at the offending entry on the exchequer roll. "It says here that Walter Pico renders 5 palfreys in payment of his debt to the king. If those creatures out there are palfreys, I'll salt my boots and eat them."
"My lord, I—"
"No excuses, Ralph. Return these sorry beasts to Pico and make him replace them with others fit to the description. If he refuses, report to me and I will deal with him. I'm not in the habit of giving house room to other men's leavings." Leaning back from the table, he laid his hand to his sword hilt in deliberate emphasis. As King Henry's marshal, he was responsible for discipline in the hall, and a sword was part of his daily apparel rather than an accoutrement of ceremony and war. "Of course," he added, rubbing a reflective thumb over the smooth curve of the pommel, "if I find out that Walter supplied 5 good palfreys, and someone has been using my absence from court to line his own purse by switching them for nags—" He let the sentence hang unfinished. Ralph licked his lips.
"I am sure it is not the case, my lord."
John raised a sceptical eyebrow. Leaning forward again, he placed his hand upon the parchment, arching long fingers over the words.
"I expect absolute loyalty and competence from my men, and I reward it generously. Play me false, or let me down, and I will find out. And if you live to regret it, you will be unfortunate. Understood?"
John was barely 25, but had won the right to be the king's marshal by more than heredity. 3 years ago, he had defended a challenge to his position in trial by combat, and settled the matter so convincingly that no one had questioned his abilities to fight or administrate since.
"My lord, I will attend to the matter,"
Ralph answered, pale and set-lipped.
"See that you do."
John picked up the parchment and studied the next entry, concerning quantities of bread for feeding the royal hounds. Usually he would have delegated the scrutiny of such lists to a subordinate, but having been absent from court, dealing with personal matters of estate in the wake of his father's death, he needed to stamp his authority on his office like a seal impressing warm wax.
"Christ, how much bread does a dog—"
He stopped and looked up as a shadow blocked his light.
"My lord—"
"Never mind that,"
said Robert Fitzroy, Earl of Gloucester, standing over the trestle, arms folded, the sunstreak now warming his blood-red tunic.
"Come outside. There's something you need to see."
John mentally sighed. It was pointless telling Gloucester he wanted to finish assessing these accounts before he went anywhere. As the king's eldest son, albeit bastard-born, Gloucester wielded a powerful influence at court. It was in John's interests to be accommodating. Besides, the man was a friend, ally and sponsor. He pushed to his feet. Gloucester was tall, but John topped him by the length of an index finger,
although the Earl's broader...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?